The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. This is my first Sunday Dharma talk, and I'm terrified, so help me out. I'm going to talk today about respect, and it's a subject that's near and dear to my heart. I've literally been working on it all my life. And a long time ago, for those of you who are here for the introductory retreat, I came to this monastery for the first time. And you may think that monks somehow materialize and show up and boom, there they are. But we were all beginners. And just like you, we were all beginners. And we all had to learn the teachings of the Dharma. And they were offered to us with respect. Now, one of the things I was taught when I first came to the monastery was to put my shoes straight. And I hope that you also learn that, in part because I find that it's one of the most valuable teachings I received, certainly. It has a practical side, of course. You know, if everybody here left their shoes askew, someone could trip and fall and hurt themselves. But also, there's, like many things in Zen training, there's both a practical side and there's a spiritual side. And the spiritual side is that when we put our shoes neatly, we're expressing the all is one. The all is one within the Buddha nature. And the reason I find this teaching so valuable is that even to this day, when I go to the meditation hall, I'll take a moment and tidy my shoes, straighten them. And I'm grateful to my shoes. And I never express gratitude to my shoes unless I'm coming to the meditation hall and I take a moment and I go, oh yes, thank you. And oh yes, bring, as Reverend Master Jiu used to say, bring the two sides of our brain together in the gassho. Sorry. And that actually helps us to be centered and still before we enter the hall or before our next activity. And that's actually a very important and helpful teaching. So this respect that we show to the things around us actually benefits us. There's this mutual back and forth bowing. When I first came, and I, like you, and I was learning all these things and all these, it was fiercer then, truthfully. But we would, you know, be bowing to people and bowing to our rooms. And, you know, it was all strange and it felt a little awkward. And yet, it was so, there was something in my heart that just leaped for joy. Because here was a place where respect was being exhibited throughout everything that was going on. And it was so... It touched me so deeply. I was so moved by it. As you know, we follow the Buddhist precepts. And the precepts are, again, a way of showing respect. If you cease from harming other beings, then you begin to respect them and you respect yourself. There's a back and forth that we're going to talk more about later in this talk. When we do something about ourselves, when we look at ourselves and begin to change ourselves, that's how we actually begin to change the world. And all of that change is, in effect, a manifestation of respect. I looked it up in the dictionary. What does respect mean? It says to being treated kindly with deference, looked up to, or seen in a positive way. I think respect is much deeper than that. I actually think it's an expression of love. It's a way of saying to a person, to an animal, to the universe, that we honor them, that we respect them, that we love them. In its deepest religious sense, Buddhism has a phrase which I love, and it says, Buddha recognizes Buddha, and Buddha bows to Buddha. And this is an expression of respect, deep respect. You know, I can remember being a child, a little kid, and wanting to be respected, which was really cute, of course. And I wondered about it, you know, and I think, well, maybe children want to be respected because they aren't. Oftentimes people talk down to children and assume they don't know anything. And so, you know, it's something I carried with me. My parents taught us all, my brother and sister and myself, to be respectful to adults. We were taught to be kind and helpful and respectful, which was good. I'm really grateful for that. And when I did that, it was a very positive experience. And I remember the times I was not respectful. So it can go both ways. But I also remember, and I know this from my personal experience, that when someone is disrespectful to us, it creates a wound in a sense. And it takes healing to get it better. And sometimes we carry that wound for years. And I say that from personal experience, from something that happened to me that was disrespectful when I was a young adult within my family. And, you know, it wasn't horrible. It was just a real rudeness and a not seeing me. And it took me years to get over that. So I was drawn to Buddhism in part because I saw how respectful everybody was to everything. And I loved it. But I'm not giving this Dharma talk because I know everything about respect. I don't. It's a work in progress, and 20 years from now, I hope to give another Dharma talk on respect because it'll be very different, I'm sure. So anyway, it's an ongoing process. As you know, as I hope you see, the monastery itself is. It tries to manifest respect. That we gassho to each other. We gassho to our rooms. We bow. Ceremonies that we just did today is partially a ceremony of respect. It's an offering of love and merit and respect to those who died in difficult situations. When novices, if someone becomes a novice, and they're taught to respect their seniors, and novices are encouraged to read a set of rules by Dogen that called the Tai Tai Koho, which is how novices should act to seniors. And when you first read the rules, you kind of say, well, these are very esoteric, and maybe they don't apply anymore. But actually, they do. And they're very profound because the spirit of them is what it's trying to convey to the novices, that if you don't learn to be respectful, then how can you respect you. I don't know how to describe that, but it's a give and take that goes back and forth. And it's not that seniors want novices to grovel, you know, or treat them kindly or any of that. It's that it's important that we learn when we're going through the monastic system how to be respectful to another human being. Because when you become a senior monk, you better be respectful. It's really important. If you can't be respectful, then you really got trouble. So that's why it's offered to us. And, you know, there's a saying, Well, we often bow, as you see, as you experience this weekend, we bow to things and people. And there's a saying that as long as bowing lasts, Buddhism will last. And what is bowing? But fundamentally, the deepest expression of respect to another being, to another thing. I tend to be a very visual person. I learn by seeing things and then doing them. And so movies can have a very profound impact upon me. And we saw one here at the monastery. It was a documentary. And for me, it exemplified respect. The documentary was called Buck. And it was about a man who was a cowboy who basically was spending his life teaching people how to be respectful to horses. And now you may think that's not such a big deal, but actually the way horses are domesticated, quote unquote, in this country is that for the most part they're broken is what the word is. And what it means is that they're tied down until they give up, and then, great, then you can ride them. And Buck actually taught a very gentle, compassionate, and wise way of dealing with horses that didn't involve tying them down, didn't involve breaking their will, and in fact just used the horse's natural language for a way to get them to become horses that you could work on and ride and so on. But it was a documentary of his life. And he had been, when he and his brother were young, they were little boy cowboys, and they were on TV, and they were on at fairs and so on, because he did all these rope tricks. And so they had these pictures of him as a young kid, and there were this cute little innocent little kids out on the stage, except there was this dark side because Buck's father was unwell and he actually tortured and beat his children. And when they were young, their mother was still alive and she tried to protect them, but she died pretty soon. You know, they were maybe 9 or 10 when she died. So they had this very traumatic life, and eventually they got rescued. Someone saw how severely they were beaten, and they were taken away from their father. So for me, as a monk, I saw this film as a beautiful transformation of karma. Here is a person who is brutalized. And we all know that oftentimes people who have been severely beaten will pass that on, and they will beat their own children because they don't have, you know, it's so raw in them that they don't have the restraints. So here is a person who had gone through some extreme cruelty and then was actually learned how to respect animals, how to respect other people, and was teaching people how to be kind and gentle and respectful to animals. And I just thought, oh boy, this is it. This is respect in action. It's interesting because the woman that, one of the women who had been trained by him and was herself a dressage teacher, she said after working with him for a while, all of a sudden, she started to say something to her husband. And she went, oh, that's not a very nice way to say it. And she kind of said it in a kinder, more respectful way. And then it went to her kids. And then it went to, you know, the people in the store, and then it went to total strangers, and because he was teaching her to see the Buddha, which is the act of respect. Buddha recognizes Buddha, and Buddha bows to Buddha. And we can be taught that. We can learn that for ourselves. I also wondered about Buck if it isn't, learning respect isn't the antidote to cruelty, if that isn't the way we break the cycle of cruelty, is to learn to see the Buddha in others. Now, someone asked me when I told them I was going to do this Dharma talk on respect, they asked me if I was going to sing Aretha Franklin's Respect, and I promised I would not. However, there is something about her song, which is that we want, you know, it's a song of wanting respect. She wants respect from her boyfriend. She wants respect. She wants him to respect her. And I myself understand this. I always wanted others to respect me. And as we all know, sometimes people respect us and sometimes they don't. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And it took me a while to realize, like a lot of things in training, that I needed to turn this inside, that I had to stop looking outside for respect. And this has been the ongoing process for me in terms of respect. Now, self-respect, before we talk about an aspect of what it is, the one thing self-respect is not, it's not thinking, oh, I'm great, I know a lot, oh, I've got such wonderful spiritual practice going on. That's not self-respect. That is pride, ego, and it's a false show, and it's not satisfying either. So that's not going to be where we're going to find our satisfaction. But the inward side, you know, a long time ago, when I was a novice, my novice, my precepts monk, that's a monk that helps novices with the precepts, and you can go to them and ask questions and so on. And in the course of a conversation with her, she mentioned that it was very fruitful to look at what we say to ourselves. And this, believe it or not, was a beginning of learning self-respect. Because when I started listening to what I said to myself when I made a mistake or when I thought something about, you know, when I was upset about something, well, you know, I say worse things. I did, anyway. I said much worse to myself than anybody ever said to me, you know, by miles. You know, we have this internal dialogue with ourselves that where we're just brutal in terms of judging and so on. And so that actually helped me to realize that I didn't have to say those things. And I began to let it go. First, I just noticed it. And then I began to kind of see if I could edit it a little bit. And then after a while, I really just got better at letting it go and saying, well, wait a minute, I don't want to go there. I don't think I want to say those things to myself. So that was actually a very helpful part towards respect, believe it or not, because it stopped that disrespect. It started converting it. I think it's very helpful to know your roots. That's one of the things we do when we train, is we look at ourselves, we look at our wall, and we see all kinds of things about ourselves. And I came from a family where there was a lot of argument. And I was the youngest in the family, and boy, you had to think fast and argue fast and quick. And you had 30 seconds to respond. And if someone was going after you, you would jump right back. And I feel like I'm hardwired for a confrontation, which is very challenging when you're a Buddhist monk. And I have taken years to recognize, oh, my reaction is to say something, but that's not who I really am. Within all of us, there is a moment, a space, where we cannot react, where we can just be still, and everybody has that. Nobody does not have it. Even though it feels like at the time, you're in the middle of it, you're reacting. But there is that space. But it's helpful to know your roots, because then you can see, okay, all right, this is what pushes my button, but I can still be still. And learning to train with that is also about respect. So this has taken years of training. This is not easy. And I think from my own experience, the more I've struggled with the feeling disrespectful or not feeling good about myself, the more sympathetic I am with other people who are themselves struggling or who who are in very difficult situations, and I feel a real affinity for how hard it is. It's an ironic thing, but when we look at ourselves and when we learn to accept ourselves, that's actually how we respect ourselves. And it doesn't necessarily follow logically, but that's my experience, that respect comes from, oh yeah, I did that. Somehow, the courage to accept our mistakes gives us respect for ourselves. Don't ask me how, but it does. That's how it works. But as we all know, this world is very complicated and challenging place to live. There are very difficult situations. There are people who are cruel. There are people who are acting in terrible ways. I mean, the Buddhist martyrs, there were all these people who had been killed. And believe me, some of them did not just go, oh, okay, great. You know, I mean, I'm sure people struggle when they're confronted in very difficult situations. And can we recognize, can we say, oh, Buddha recognizes Buddha, Buddha bows to Buddha, in a very difficult situation? Can we do that in the terrorist? You know, can we, as Master Astor said last night in the discussion, it's hard when you hear about some people being killed just randomly. You know, it's us. We're not separate. That can happen to us. And, you know, can we be respectful? Can we still hold respect? What about if we're in prison? There are a lot of people who are put in prison for minor things, for things that aren't fair, or even when they do terrible things, they're just denigrated. And how do we have respect in those kinds of situations? What about in war? You know, people do crazy things in war. And can we be respectful in these situations? You know, my what about list goes on and on. I mean, there's so many things going on in this world. And how do we recognize Buddha nature and not turn away? You know, what about people who are quote-unquote unworthy of our respect? You know, Adolf Hitler, millions of people killed. Stalin killed millions of people. Pol Pot killed millions of people. You know, I mean, Pol Pot, he killed the least of the three I just named. And but he killed more people than are in the city of San Francisco. You know, when you kind of think about it, you kind of go, oh my goodness. You know, what about somebody who does horrific things? Can we still respect them? What do we do when we're in a situation where things are insane, really? Because this is insanity. We all know this. I mean, you know, people who do terrible things, this is not mental health. This is unwellness. And how do we train with that? as individuals. When we hear of terrorist bombing, what do we do? How do we train with that? Do we just hate all Muslims and push ourselves away and try and make us safe? Or do we find a way within our own hearts to be respectful, not to cut off anybody, not to cut off anybody? I think, as I mentioned earlier, respect is often a back and forth type thing, because sometimes people respect you, sometimes they won't. Sometimes they respect you because they think you're one way and then you're not really, or they don't respect you. It's a yo-yo type thing. And that's how people are with respect. Oh, I'll respect you, but I won't respect you. I mean, you know, it's crazy. So we have to find it within ourselves in order to not be pulled back and forth by that. When Angela Davis was growing up, she was in the she's a civil rights activist, for those of you who may not know. She was growing up in the Jim Crow South, and she and her sister were learning French. And so they went into this department store. Now, if they had gone into this department store not speaking French, no, they wouldn't have been kicked out. But because they pretended that they were tourists from France, they got taken in. They got, you know, oh, of course we'll help you, all this kind of stuff going on. And that, you know, that's often how respect works, is that, you know, okay, I can like that, but I can't like that. And that isn't going to happen to us. That's not going to solve it for us. Anyone can see Buddha in a moment. Really, really, it can be a flash. All of a sudden, you look at your cat. There's the Buddha. You see it. You look at a horse. No, there's the Buddha. You look at another person that you just respect. Oh, there's the Buddha. You see it. In one sense, it's easy to see Buddha nature. But to see it daily and in difficult situations, that takes work. That's a lifetime worth work. You know, it's not easy to do that. I have to say I've made a mantra of Buddha recognizes Buddha and Buddha bows to Buddha. And I made that mantra in part to myself, because we have to learn to entrust that we too are Buddha. It's a really important thing. You know, we all say, oh, yeah, sure, maybe not. And especially if we listen to what we say to ourselves, we wouldn't talk to a Buddha like that. So, again, it takes time. Over the course of my life, I guess because I've been so interested in respect, but I've spent time learning about people who were able to be in very difficult situations and still trust Buddha, still see the Buddha nature. Now, I mentioned last night to those who were in the retreat about a Jewish woman who, during World War II, who started keeping a diary in 1941, and already, you know, Hitler was invading, had invaded much of Europe. There were war going on, and she kept this diary for 2 years, and she worked very hard on herself spiritually. I think she hoped that she would live, but she had a very strong sense she wouldn't. And she didn't feel like, oh, I have a lot of time, I can just hang out and there's nothing, no, you know, it'll be all right. She really worked harder on herself. And in fact, one of the things she said about other people was that people didn't do their daily practice. And if they did their daily practice, it would have helped them. So I thought that was really interesting. But she, because she worked so hard on herself, she was like this luminous person in the concentration camp. And people talked about how, you know, how she helped other people, gave them faith, you know, that they would be all right no matter what happened to them. However, She did say in one of her journals that it was very hard for her to look at the face of a guard, a Nazi guard, who was hating. So, you know, we're human. I think it's really important to keep that no matter how hard we work, no matter how much we see the Buddha in something, it's still very difficult. And that's okay. That's part of our being human. I think if we want to be respectful to all beings, then we have to do the work. We have to learn to respect ourselves, and we have to learn to respect other people. If we screw up, if we don't do the thing in the way we want to do it, if we say something inappropriately, if we are disrespectful to someone, I know for myself, I work in the treasurer's office, and I'm concentrating on trying to do some financial thing, and then someone will pop in the office, and that's a prime opportunity for me to practice respectfulness. And I think we all have those particular things in our daily life. What is the thing that kind of makes it hard for us? And that's the thing we have to work on. That's how we begin to convert this, to have the ability to see Buddha recognizes Buddha. Now I'm going to end with a quote from Bashu Banzu, who was one of our ancestors, which you all recited who were here for the retreat. You recited during when we recited the ancestral line this morning. And he's talking about the bodhicitta, which is the Buddha mind. It's the ability to see Buddha. And I just want to say that it takes a lot of faith and practice to always see Buddha. But this is the answer of all the what ifs. What if this person, or what about this person, or what about that person? This is what he is answering that for me. And he says, this bodhicitta is free from compulsive activities. It has no beginning. It has no end. It cannot be defiled by impurities, no matter how impure we become. It cannot be obscured by egocentric individual prejudices, no matter how prejudiced we may become. It is the very spiritual essence of Buddhas, or the blood of Buddhas. The bodhicitta, when blindfolded by the clouds of passion, avarice, ignorance, and folly, does not reveal its intrinsic spiritual worth, yet it remains within the person and is to be found in all beings. However defiled and obscured the bodhicitta may find itself in profane hearts, it is essentially the same as that in all the Buddhas. So there's no getting around it. It really is Buddha recognizes Buddha and Buddha bows to Buddha. And that quote, I heard that quote years ago on a tape that Reverend Master Jiu did. If anybody knows who translated it, I would be happy to give credit to that. But anyway, all right, thank you all very much.